You are listening to the Ag Tech Talk podcast by Agribusiness Global. Each episode, we speak with industry experts exploring the intersection of cutting-edge technology and crop protection, getting intel on the fast-changing ag input market. Welcome to Ag Tech Talk. I'm your host, Michelle Kipsaris, Managing Editor for Agribusiness Global. Today, we'll be speaking to Dr. Noman Ahmed, Executive Director for Kinetic Germany, as we dive into the promising realm of predictive technology and its potential contributions to advancing crop protection strategies in the years ahead. In the simplest way, can you explain what predictive intelligence, or PI, is?
Great question, and one that's very tough to put in a nutshell, but I thought about it, and essentially it is collecting and accumulating knowledge, right? So when we say knowledge, we're basically, you know, you have data sources, you have anecdotal evidence, you have all sorts of information that sits out there. So how do you get to actually connect this data and information in a meaningful way and then intelligently lead you to an answer, basically, right? So that's what we're doing with intelligence. Now, when that intelligence part basically becomes forward-looking and we're trying to apply our learnings to future questions and problems, we're solving for a future issue. This is when we talk about predictive intelligence. And an easiest way of explaining it is basically looking through a crystal ball, right? PI, or predictive intelligence, is basically a systematic, robust, standardized, scalable way of looking through that, let's say, a crystal ball and giving you an answer. So if the fortune teller basically is changed, it does not change the outcome of the prediction, right? So that's the easiest way to actually explain it.
How does predictive intelligence help with forecasting supply and demand for crop protection?
I think the best explained saying, there's always when, you know, when in research, when you talk about correlation and causality, right? So normally, I have two data sources, and if the trends are matching, there must be a connection, right? This is always a starting point. But predictive intelligence basically looks through the plethora of information that we have, which might be structured, unstructured, and then allows us to say in isolation, if we were to put everything together in one single box and just wanted to test out, you know, what's weather going to do on demand, what the other pieces are going to do on supply, we're able to actually single these elements out and then give you a response to, how demand and supply is going to behave, basically. So in an integrated way, bringing in all sorts of different data sources and singling out one of them and basically saying, okay, your demand is going to change by X due to reason Y. And most of the times, it's not one reason, but it's multiple reasons that will actually, or drivers that will actually influence demand and supply. And getting to the point where you can actually combine this information in the same model and the same approach is basically where the predictive intelligence comes in, where you're actually saying nothing to be seen in isolation, but in combination. And it's about causality and it's not about correlation.
And I'm sure it's different too, depending on, I guess, like what region people are in as well. Like someone, they might need something different than someone on the other side of the world.
Exactly. And it depends very much on who's looking at the output, right? What persona is looking at the output. It might be an R&D manager, it might be a brand manager, it might be a strategic person, right? So the usage will be very different. And hence, the way you've actually created these models and the outputs will be very, different from user to user. And from region to region, even from question to question, the approach you need to take to actually arrive at the answer is going to be very different. Because let's say you have a market that's not impacted by a weather phenomena, whereas the other is impacted by a very difficult weather phenomena. Let's say you have a drought situation in the U.S. in a specific county that might not be very true for another part of the same country. So it needs to be very, very different in terms of how we approach that from an intelligence perspective.
With so much oversupply in the market presently in crop protection, can predictive intelligence analyze additional influences of war and government policies' effects on the market?
Yeah, simple answer is yes. Again, I mean, from region to region, from situation to situation, the whole learning process, I mean, everybody, you know, these days is using these large language models and generative AI, right? So I think best to explain these models is, there's a model that's been trained and has been learning a lot of different insights. For, let's say if you're a lawyer, you're feeding this machine with a lot of legal information. So up until the time where you can actually go in and just ask a question, a random question around, hey, I have an issue. Can you solve this for me? So because it has learned on that data, it's able to provide you an answer. And it's very similar in predictive intelligence, where we feed it with enough information, learnings where certain policies have had an impact on the market. So the more you feed it with learning information, the model, the more accurate the output will be at the end of the day. So yes, absolutely. I mean, economics, macroeconomics, slight changes in trade regimes, international crisis, or let's say situations where you have supply disruptions, you know, all these things will have an impact on how markets will behave ultimately. And this is exactly the purpose of predictive intelligence, to combine these sources and then basically arrive at the answer. Hence to my previous answer around, you know, how whether we could predict demand and supply changes, I said, it's not about correlation, because it's not about, okay, what's President X or President Y going to do? You know, it's really about what type of policies that a certain mindset or ideology lead to, and how will this then essentially impact trade regimes, international relations, and how will this then impact crop developments, and how will this then ultimately impact the input industry, which is basically crop chemicals and seed, for instance, right?
What are the key trends in the sector that will cause disruption for agribusiness?
I think the biggest change is we're in a very, let's say, conservative sort of industry. Generally, when you talk about agriculture, you know, and I'm not talking about just the North American market. You know, you have markets where farmers are slightly more progressive and more open to, let's say, technology, and also more savvy, tech savvy, as far as precision ag is concerned and other topics. And it's the same here, where I think the change is going to be from trusting, you know, I mean, the gut feel approach and saying, well, I trust how I've done things, or how my future, for let's say, older generations have done stuff. So I pretty much understand what's going to happen next year. That is not auditable. That's not, it can change from based on your mood or how you feel, right? So the whole point about predictive intelligence is changing that mindset from a gut feel, you know, experience-based approach to a more, let's say, auditable, standardized, robust approach, where you can actually, and it's not saying we're replacing that accumulated and great knowledge that has come over time, but we're basically saying we're building an exoskeleton around your brain and you're giving you abilities that you didn't have in the past. So basically, ultimately helping you to make decisions with precision, and also in an integrated way, because something that you would not be able to do manually over just your brain power as it is today. So all these tools are add-ons to your ability to make better decisions and quicker, basically, right? So ahead of time.
Is there any other practical examples of how predictive intelligence can support a business's success?
Yeah, I mean, multiple examples. So we could just spend hours and hours on that. But I'll talk about some actual use cases that we've worked on. And one of them was very interesting. I mean, with us being able to actually track how climate and long-term weather phenomena are basically impacting crop pests and diseases across the globe, you can basically go in and create models around what does this mean for demand and supply on the side of, let's say, different insects, insecticides, mode of actions, chemicals, you know, what is needed in future in a region where today you might not have an issue with a pest that, you know, sits somewhere else. So as pests are moving, we developed a model that was capable of giving our clients an indication of, you know, hey, in the next 2 years, we're expecting an influx of pest X and Y into region Z. So basically, if you want to, you know, capture that market space, why don't you take a couple of products from other regions where they worked against these pest spectrum and introduce them early enough into that market, right? So that had a huge business impact for a client, basically saying, right, you know, ahead of time, you can focus R&D on that. You can actually basically start planning out how your supply chains are going to work, where your technical material is going to be sourced. So a lot of information ahead of time that can guide strategy and also, you know, guide investments into the right areas, just as one example. And the other one I would like to mention is also from a behavioral aspect, because as Kinetic, I mean, we collect data from the farmers direct. So they have this behavioral aspect of, you know, okay, why does an end user actually use a product, right? At the end of the day, you know, I sold into the market. I thought this is why they would be using it. But at the end of the day, farmers make decisions. They're not always, I would say, irrational, but they're different from what you actually had proposed to do at the end of the day. So what happens is these learnings are just, I mean, like a gold mine for us, because we can then say, okay, if certain behaviors are developing in a certain direction next year, this means that your price policy, you know, your brand offering or portfolio offering in a certain market should just change according to that behavioral aspects, because it will influence very much how much of the market you can actually capture. So yeah, that's big ROI items for our clients. And I think this is how the industry can plan in advance. And if you look at the generic community, I think also great use cases there. You know, everybody was talking about the huge price slump we've seen in key generic chemicals over the last couple of months. If that is foreseen, it also helps the generic community to plan, you know, from a timeline perspective. You know, how long does it take actually, if I have a change in my specific market, for example, in China or India, right, from a sourcing perspective, how long does it take for that change to hit the formulated chemistry market, right? So that understanding is gold dust for even the generic community to try and find out new ways of operating in their businesses.
Do you think that can help speed up, whether it's improvement to products or new products, like realizing that these products, like you said, aren't being used the way that the producers intended? Do you think having this data could help?
Absolutely. I think what it does is it allows you just to market them also in a different way. I mean, if I pick one use case, right? So your perception was that growers are using your products, yeah, just to combat a certain pest or tackle a certain pest or disease. At the end of the day, you understand that they're using it in combination with other chemicals just to make sure that it has a yield-enhancing impact or something else is happening that you did not foresee. So just labeling your brand with a different, you know, a different perspective in that area would just give you another way of let's say, communicating your GDM, go-to-market strategy differently to growers and end users. That said, I think it's also very important that ahead of time means that once you pick up trends in the market where you're seeing that certain behaviors are actually influencing farmers shifting away from your brand. So if we talk about the topic of churn and brand loyalty, this is where many of our tools or our use case specifically on Intellytics is basically providing end users the ability to actually minimize that churn by knowing, okay, what are the key drivers that are actually leading to farmers churning away or loyal customers just to leave our brand? You know, what is the price? Is it other things that we can actually influence? You know, and if you give this ability to clients 12 months, 2 years ahead of the actual marketing year happening, this gives them the ability to actually go out and be more tactical about how they approach the market.
The weather has a huge impact on input demand at a farm level. How can predictive intelligence help agribusiness get ahead of this demand?
Pretty similar to what I said earlier, that yes, in isolation, very difficult to say. That would be a correlation, basically. I take my weather variable and I see insecticide demand. I say, oh, well, next year I'm expecting 15% increase. That would be wrong, right? So it's again, an integrated approach. So I think, what is the question? Is the question short-term? Well, then I would say, let's look at weather. If the question is longer-term from a projection perspective, let's look at climate, because climate is long-term climate normals, weather normals, and then you can look at the anomalies in these patterns and then try to understand how this will influence grower decision. But essentially what it is you can predict the outcomes for demand and supply on crop chemicals by understanding how weather and climate patterns would impact crop growth, for instance, right? Pest development. So back to my other point around pest predictions and forecasting. This is where you then basically indirectly link back the weather impacts from crop developments into pest incidents around the globe, and then in return get an output for, okay, what does this mean now for a certain chemical, for a certain mode of action, you know? And if you package resistance into it as well, then you have a perfect tool which is basically taken into account resistances, new pest developments, higher incidences of new pests. At the same time, also what you can factor in and build in is basically regulatory aspects and environmental scrutiny, and also consumer aspects, right? What do consumers demand, right, from their food? So all these put into the same bucket of analysis, basically. And then you say, well, now out of all these impact drivers on crop protection demand, I just want to see what the impact of weather is. Then it's okay, because otherwise, if I just do weather, then what I tend to do is I bias the output and I think, well, the 90% effect that I'm seeing on my crop demand is just coming from weather. But with predictive intelligence, what happens is you might still see whether being 13, 14% of a demand driver in the change, right? But if you don't include the other integrated variables into the data sets when you run the analysis, you'll wrongly assume that all the impact is down to weather. So that's how forensically you have to go about it. And you have to look at biophysical, let's say, aspects of the plants and the situations around very specific, let's say, agroclimatic zones in each country and each region. And then at the same time, every crop itself, you know, behaves very differently to weather changes. You know, when some crops are very robust, others are not, depending very much on the crop variety as well, right? You have drought tolerance built into some of the crops with genetic modifications and genetic engineering. So there are many, many aspects that can be very different from the perspective of what type of question I'm asking, right? So the question is, hey, go at variety level in a specific crop and tell me what the crop protection product demand is going to be. Now I have to see whether there's a genetic modification built into that variety, yes or no. So all these aspects will matter. So in a nutshell, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's we can predict. But the question has to be asked in a very precise way.
But it's also because weather's, even though it's something that we can try to predict or work around, it's not really something we can control. Oh,
Absolutely.
if it's going to rain or have a snowstorm, it's going to happen. So you just
Exactly.
have to see what other factors you can add to protect our
Exactly. Yeah.
crops.
And exactly. And that's why I think with the masses of research that we have out there, right, around climate and, you know, the IPCC and this whole discussion about climate change, there is a vast majority of models available out there that we can actually use, right? So I don't have to go out and create my own climate model. So what's out there, I just use as an input for my models. And then these models can basically then help me, yeah, understand how crop input demand is going to change if certain climate scenarios come true. You know, and then you can play around. You know, we can basically say, let's make them more severe than they appear right now. And this is where we want to give the end users, or we provide end users, the ability to actually interact with these tools and also with the output that we provide to our clients.
Do you think that there's any negatives to having too much information to put into like you said, you have to formulate your PI to essentially ask the right questions. But if you're getting so many statistics and so many versions of the same questions, do you think maybe that can, having too much information could be bad in any way?
That's an excellent question. Again, to the first question around predictive intelligence, right? So it's all about who does the job of actually accumulating the knowledge and saying, let us put 30 years of data into, let's say, a learning process. And every time something changed, we try to explain why it changed. And then it becomes sort of a robust exercise. So then we can test again and again. Every time I ask a similar question, do I get a similar response, right? So this is where you come into a robust area where you're saying, okay, this model seems to understand what I'm asking. Once that part, and that's the hardest part, and that's what we claim we've actually figured out and we've done over a process of 5 years now, where now all these questions that we just tackled, you can ask them, right? But all I'm saying is how deep these questions should be responded to, that specification has to come from the end user, because you rightly said, your end user or the persona that's looking at your output might be very different, right? So that's why I'm saying the R&D person has a very different view or question, right? The supply chain manager will have a very different question. The strategic head, a crop division will have very different questions. So just ask the questions. I mean, if to simplify it in an LLM or LLM version, generative AI, you just write your prompt. And if the prompt is bad, the output is going to be bad, right? So it's not the technology that is bad in that sense. You know, a lot of people will write articles these days, well, you know, OpenAI is failing because it doesn't give me the right answers to my question. Well, then the first question I would ask is, did you ask the right question, right? That's so what we're trying to help with. If you would leave it as an open space, yes, then it would be maybe not helpful because somebody who is not capable of asking the right questions might struggle, right? So this is where, as Kinetic, our use cases we've packaged into, let's say this is your pricing manager, this is your churn analytics brand loyalty person, this is your market forecaster. So basically trying to help that, like, this is your ring fence sort of use case where you go in and you ask questions, or we've pre-populated things for you that you can use without intuitively, without having to. bother about or worry about, what type of questions to ask. Yet we want to give everyone the opportunity to also flexibly make use of generative AI going forward and ask questions that maybe are not answered with this ring fence use case or, let's say, user interface that we've designed. But that's how we are solving for it right now.
You know, a lot of people are scared that it's going to replace people in the job force. So you really see it more as an addition to a team versus replacing people.
Absolutely. So that the teams can focus on things that are more important, right? So imagine you spend 60% of your time on your team just getting data together, right? So combining it, cleaning it, and then trying to understand, okay, how do I put it together at the end of the day? So let's say 8 months in a year, you just are busy with these type of things. So 4 months, you basically have to take actual decisions or think about strategy. So what we want to change is we want to say, hey, we might not replace 100% of your thought processes and everything you do, which might be excellent. But if even if we take 30, 40% of your, let's say, the burden off your shoulders on having to do these, building models, putting data together, we will help you. So again, to the topic that I addressed when we were talking about the other question, I see this as an exoskeleton around your brain. Then same as all the robotics we're seeing these days, where you get this robot arm, pick up very heavy stuff that you normally wouldn't be able to pick up, right? So this is what we're saying. It's just going to shift the focus from where we are today, so things where we waste a lot of time on, to more meaningful and more, let's say, in terms of ROI, way more important things than in the past. So I think it's just a shift of focus, a shift of attention, which is going to be more beneficial for the end user rather than dangerous.
What kind of information can PI provide as far as trends and biologicals globally and regionally?
Very good question. And I think here it's all down to the combination of the behavioral aspects that we're seeing in the end user space. Because ultimately, what does a company do? They create products for the market, and then because the market has a certain demand, right? So now, and we have another element coming in, which is basically regulatory and environmental scrutiny, right? So you're saying, well, we want you to be reducing your environmental footprint, right? Agriculture is important. We have to feed the world. Everybody understands that. So now how do we get there? So that adoption space is something that we look into very carefully. So we started early enough with the, if I look at, for instance, as a comparison into the GMO space, right? So you bring a new trait or stack traits, and then you're trying to see how long does it take for growers to actually adapt that, right? And end users to actually adopt, to change. So these adoption rates, you can track in our data for 30 years now. So if we apply that knowledge and learning into, okay, how long does it take for a new technology to, let's say, position itself in the market space and really penetrate, that learning can be built into a modeling exercise. So we're treating this as a new technology. So in the biorational space, biostimulant space, biological space, what we're doing is we're saying, okay, let's look at what behavioral aspects are leading growers to actually adapt. Okay, what are price premiums doing to them? So price, even on price premiums, right? Today, we've seen massive growth in the last year where we had a very difficult year where growers are actually saying, well, even if I have to pay a price premium, I'm still going to use that biological in more established markets. So these learnings from behavioral aspects, returning back into the competitive intelligence, market intelligence picture. So what it does then is give us an understanding of, okay, what categories? Pheromones, right? Then you have microbials in the biological space. What's taking off and what's not? And what are the reasons? And by looking at it from a perspective of, okay, what do we expect next year? We can then basically say, okay, in the next 6 months, we're expecting this and that biologicals category to grow by, I don't know, 15%, right? For that and that and that reason. It's like being able to track that change using learnings from the past on how other technologies have been adopted and how long it has taken growers to actually take them up. But in combination with what regulatory is doing, so simple, What I would like to say is if you look at the sustainable use regulation not making it through the commission or wherever it was put in for debate or decision, what it tells us is, okay, all right, does this now mean that everybody's going to stop investing into biological research, or are they just going to back to conventional chemistry? That mindset is now, no, it's maybe just going to be a bit of a time where people will again have some volumetric growth from conventional chemistry. And at the same time, they will keep on growing in that new space of biorationals, biologicals. So how is that replacement going to take place? Is it going to be one by one, or is it going to be, you know, I'll take a little bit off my conventional chemistry from the integrated pest management perspective and just replace or introduce a little bit of biologicals in that space. So that tracking is what we're doing. And that goes into a model then. And then basically we're able to drill down into the different categories of biologicals and biostimulants and give you an insight on what the true market potential is, you know, where do we see growth? And that's also in a specific tool that we've actually created called Biologica.
Is there anything else that you think we haven't touched on that you want to just include, or anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, I would say one thing I would like to add is there's nothing like we can't say the process of learning is finished, right? So even predictive intelligence and intelligence that we've created is not finished. And that's why every single data set or information that we collect on a daily basis is relevant for improving our understanding of what the future is going to do. So it's a continuous process where we keep on adding information and improving our learning. So I think that's where it will be very interesting with the Internet of Things and more machinery, you know, connected to that space, that all these real-time data and information that's coming through is just going to change our perspective on how we do our day-to-day work in the farming space.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Ag Tech Talk podcast by Agribusiness Global. To find more podcasts, videos, event and webinar information, and the latest ag news, visit agribusinessglobal.com.